Today's episode of Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You is brought to you by Robinhood. With Robinhood, you can invest in stocks, options, and ETFs right from your phone. You can even spend and earn interest on uninvested cash. And with fractional shares, you can buy stocks at any amount, including companies like Apple, Amazon, and Tesla for as little as $1. And that's with no commission fees or account minimums. So whether you're new to investing and ready to learn, or just looking for a better experience, stop waiting and join the 10 million Robinhood users. Listeners can get started with a free stock by going to jeff.robinhood.com. That's Jeff with a G, .robinhood.com. All investments involve risk. This is not an investment advice, a recommendation, or solicitation of any security. Other fees may apply. Visit rbnhd.co/fees. The free stock program is subject to certain limitations. Annual percentage yield on uninvested cash is paid by program banks and is variable. Robinhood Financial is not a bank.
What was the game-changing moment?
When we scored. I mean, I don't remember that much of it, but it was f***ing awesome.
From The Athletic, I'm Jeff Schwartz. Did Joe Burrow just finish the greatest college football season ever?
Oh, yeah.
Plus, the pressure's on the Chiefs. And Russell Wilson clearly needs some help. Please help out number three for the Seahawks. It's Tuesday, January 14th, and this is Jeff Schwartz of Smarter Than You. Welcome in to the Tuesday show. Off an impressive performance by the LSU Tigers as they take down Clemson and they win the national championship. Joe Burrow went off, had over 600 yards total offense for the Tigers. Not him personally, just their team in general, and they dominated a great Clemson defense. We came off on a weekend two game of some outstanding NFL action. We'll get into that, and we'll get into conference championship weekend, which is coming up in just a couple of days. But first, you want to start with Joe Burrow because, everybody, he might be better than Tim Tebow, and that really bothers
you. Oh, come on. Don't do that. Don't kill the buzz I got going right now. Joe Burrow, I'll tell you what. J.J. Watt wears Joe Burrow pajamas. That's how great an American Joe Burrow is right now. I have never seen coverage like this man just received. And I say man because he's older than a lot of the guys in the NFL already. He's older than Lamar Jackson. He just got a graduate degree. Okay, this guy's been around forever, but he did complete one of the greatest college football seasons of all time. Congrats to him. I think the coverage is insanity. And I want to jump right into it. Yes, he played his ass off at LSU. He completed a perfect season, okay? He threw for the most touchdowns anyone's ever thrown for in college football. He looked awesome last night. He's a very, very good college football player. But are we positive this dude's going to turn around the Cincinnati Bengals? Like, okay, I know he's from Ohio. I've heard. That's cool. Why is this guy and what he does in college football actually going to translate to the NFL?
All right, this is a great question because I feel like there's a lot to discuss here. And Joe Burrow, by the way, I love his attitude. I love the way he plays. He backs up the swag. But there is a little bit of like the swag stuff that we talk about with other players that kind of bother us with Baker Mayfield and with Johnny Manziel are kind of there with Joe Burrow a little bit. I think Joe Burrow's a lot more humble than those guys. But the same things we've said about those guys, would you agree a little bit the personality of Joe Burrow fit with that or not?
That he's got the right kind of swag?
The right or wrong type of swag? What do you think?
I don't know, man. I tweeted last night. He looks like the cocky QB who beats up nerds in an 80s movie. Like, I think he just hides the cocky swag part differently. Okay. I think he's polite. But I don't think
it's a problem. I think that with other players, we thought it was a problem. Here, I don't think it is. All right, but let's get to the real meat of this, is that what it'll do in the NFL. So let's kind of explain their offense now. So they have a unique offense for LSU, for the SEC. They love to be an empty protection, which means you have five offensive linemen only in protection. No running backs, no tight ends, and the field is spread way out, right? So you have, it's basically almost like an air raid concept. If you hear the word air raid, right? Mm-hmm. Four wide receivers, everything's spread out. Air raid, though, keeps a running back in a bunch. LSU kind of has like a pro style air raid, okay? They have pro style routes, pro concepts, but they spread everything out. The reason why they do this, and they do it over 50% of the time, is Joe Burrow loves to read a defense this way. And the reason why it's great in college to do that is because the hash marks are wider in college, okay? So defenses, if the ball's on the left hash list, I know I'm getting kind of technical.
Please.
Here, just pay attention. Ball's on the left hash, okay? In college, from the left hash to the right sideline, so across the field, is a longer distance than from the left hash to the sides in the NFL. It's bigger, right? It's wider, okay? And the reason why that's important is defenses have to cheat in college to cover all that open space that you don't have in the NFL. And so when you're empty protection, when everything is spread out wide, it's easier for a quarterback to read the defense. You can also read man or zone coverage. You can read if pressures are coming. It's easier to read what's happening. And that's what Joe Burrow loves to do. Now, a lot of guys say they like to do that, but then they don't know where to go with the ball. They don't know how to throw accurately. So the advantage that Burrow has is that he's able to really dissect what coverages they're playing based on the formations that LSU is in. But I guess on the plus side is that Burrow is supremely accurate and knows where to go with the ball. So he's not going to have the advantage of being in those formations as often in the NFL. And in the NFL, you can disguise coverages a lot easier based off just the alignment of the field. And the players on defense are just better suited to disguise things, right? They're better trained athletes and quicker to move and whatnot. And you don't have as many wide receivers typically dressed in a game as you do in college. And there's many reasons why it's not going to be the same. So the only worry I have with Joe Burrow is when he gets to the NFL, it's just going to be a lot different than college, which it is for everyone, but he's not going to have the benefit of sitting an empty with the spread open offense and figuring out defenses at the rate he's able to do that in college. And so when it's tougher, what will he be? Now, this is a question for everyone, right? I mean, Carson Wentz went to North Dakota State. It's the same question, right? How is he going to be when things got different in the NFL? And he showed an ability to really understand the concepts and to be an accurate passer. So I think he's going to be fine in the NFL, Gabe.
Okay. That was a really interesting point. So let me throw a few things out at you. One of the things he gets a lot of credit for, deservedly, one of the things that he seems to do very well against college defenses is running.
I don't care about that.
Right. So I'm guessing that at the next level, he can't do what he does with his feet, right? Like, guys are bigger, stronger, faster. Well, he's just going to get lit up.
Yeah, I don't see him. I just see him being a pocket guy, essentially.
Okay. So what would you equate him to, Russell Wilson? Like, what are we thinking about? Who should we be picturing in terms of athleticism, mobility, that part of his game?
Who should we picture?
Like, he wants to stand there and throw, yeah. Read a defense and throw. But if he has to run, he can. So who's sort of ceiling in that part of his game should we be comparing him to? He's not Lamar Jackson. We know that. But he's not Tom Brady.
Yeah. I think he's somewhere in the middle. I people said Andy Dalton.
Andy Dalton? Has he ever run the ball in any direction?
But you don't have to run the ball. You have to just be able to move in the pocket.
Okay, fine. So let's talk about so we're gonna discount the thing that made him exceptionally good, which is his ability to run. He made some amazing plays with his feet all season long, including last night. So we're saying that doesn't matter anymore. So that's a concern for me.
Yeah, but not really, because he was great from the pocket though. He threw for 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, he did. So that's my next question. Do most college quarterbacks throw to NFL level receivers?
No, this is an issue that Alabama quarterbacks have had. With coming to the NFL, is they don't really have the talent is so the talent gap at Alabama is so large. The NFL, you just don't have that talent gap that you have at Alabama. So this is a concern, yes, is that he has all these pro guys at LSU. He's going to have LSU pro guys, but they're not going to be that much better than their opponents like they are in college.
Right. So every guy he throws to all season long, even against some of he beat all the best teams he could face.
He beat
the toughest schedule like ever. Okay. To get here and to win was phenomenal. I mean, he really, jokes aside, he deserves a conversation about greatest college football season of all time. We'll give him that. But every time he throws the ball, it's going to a guy who's going to the NFL, who's playing against a guy who probably isn't, just statistically. Now, I know Clemson has some NFL guys out there. Obviously, Alabama does. Georgia does, too. He beat all those guys. But it just, I don't know, man. Like, you're throwing Moss's son isn't even the best receiver on your team. When Randy Moss's son is not the best player you're throwing to, you got a real good team. And I worry when you go to the Bengals, the gap, like you said, is suddenly vast. You don't have mismatches. You don't have guys who can win one-on-ones. You can't throw jump balls. He threw some nice balls, but he also threw a few that it looked like the bigger, stronger, faster guy could just go get for him.
Well, yes, number one, Chase is amazing. This is a concern with I think every quarterback who plays on these super teams, right? Is that in how those pro guys is how do they translate to the NFL when they don't have all the pro guys? And the guys have struggled that way. And I think it's a valid concern to have if you're trying to find ways not to draft Joe Burrow. But I do think that he's just better. Tua has the same issues, in my opinion, and Tua's just hurt all the time. So to me, it feels like you're fine drafting Burrow over Tua still.
Yeah, I would say I am comfortable drafting him over Tua, especially because of the injuries. But then how come, why is it that the same people who are going to tell me he's a no-brainer, the most obvious number one pick of all time, and, you know, I don't want to misquote people, but McShay was raving about him last night. A year ago, he was a fourth or fifth rounder to McShay. Last night, he's the no-brainer number one. You explain that. I can't. What I don't quite understand is why it's so obvious he's going to succeed and a number one pick is destiny versus, and yeah, I'm going to bring him up. Tim Tebow, oh, he's going to be a bum at the next level. People had doubts about Vince Young. Oh, people had doubts about, of course, Johnny Manziel.
Because they weren't as accurate. Because they were not as accurate. Dude, Joe Burrow is supremely accurate. And even with the wide receivers he has, he knows where he's going with the ball, and he throws the ball very accurately from the pocket. Tim Tebow never did that. Vince Young didn't throw the ball as accurately. And I think another thing, too, is the quote-unquote, pro style of their offense. Like, he's doing pro things. Tim Tebow did nothing in college that he would do in the NFL until the Broncos decided to change their entire offense for 8 games for him.
Yeah, they won most of those games, by the way.
They won a game where he was 2 for 8 passing, all right? Like, calm down, Tim Tebow truther. I know you're upset that he wasn't on the college football top 10 list, which was, well, by the way, these top 10 lists are atrocious, all right? Last night, they put out the top 10 players in cultural history. The youngest guy graduated college in 1989. So you're telling me in the last 30 years, there's not one player in college football who's a top 10 player all time?
That's what they're telling you. I looked at, I was so mad. Forget about Tebow for a second, because obviously he belongs higher.
So does Reggie Bush does too.
But right, so we're pretending Reggie Bush didn't play college football, right? Apparently. Reggie Bush, Tim Tebow, Vince Young, all, you know, guys from our lifetime who lit it up, who maybe didn't have the NFL success that they were hoping for. I mean, Reggie had a nice career, but suddenly they're not top, not even top 25. Like, Tebow, I think, was 76 out of 150 all time. That's an absolute joke. I mean, say whatever you want about the guy. You know, criticize him in a number of ways. I've heard it all. He's absolutely in the top 25 college football players of all time. Nobody should dispute that. So he's not there. The problem is, I looked into it. The method they chose these players by was they had 150 people on a panel. So they did some kind of a vote, right? The people on the panel are former coaches, players, and ADs, right? So former, which means, statistically speaking, older folks, all right? Former media members and broadcasters, so people who've been around college football forever and are no longer doing it, and then quite a few current media members. So just on average, these are going to be older people, certainly people older than us, Jeff, because we're still doing it. So right. Imagine when we're not doing it 20, 30, 40 years from now. We're going to be pretty old. And they're saying, go ahead and rank this. Well, who do you think they're going to pick?
Yeah,
I mean, look, I looked at the list. I think Jim Thorpe was a top 10 player of all time. I don't even think there's footage of him. I read something that he apparently punted the ball to himself and then they changed the rule. He kicked it so high and was so fast that he caught it himself and ran it in for a touchdown. And that's a top 10 player all time in football. You can't, first of all, that's not possible. Second of all, you can't do that by the rules of the game. And we're calling him a top 10 player? Like, what the hell, people?
There's not even like stat. Oh, here it is. Stats. Is there college football stats? Is this a bunch of Olympic stats for him?
Listen, I didn't even know what the man looked like. I know he's legendary. I'm sure people want to get in your mentions and yell at you about what you do and don't know. Who are these lists for?
I'm trying to find, like, football stats, and I can't
he's
find
a fascinating individual and probably a terrific athlete.
Well,
and somebody
we should... he played better than Tim Tebow.
Dude, stop. We should all know more about Jim Thorpe, but the point I'm making is simply, who is this list for? Why are we using up halftime to celebrate a bunch of players? And then, yeah, Barry Sanders is the young guy out there. Like, it should just all be Barry and Bo Jackson. Like, fine, you want Herschel Walker in there? Yeah, that's like early 80s. I'll go for that. But then no one? No one else that we've seen play? I'm 38 years old, okay? I'm kind of an old person at this point. I have to have watched these guys to get excited about to tweet about it, which I think is what you're looking for when you make a list like this.
Yeah. I'm still stuck on the Jim Thorpe. I'm trying to find any sort of mention of him playing like actual football, like what he did at football, why he's there. I mean, obviously it doesn't really have. Yeah. I don't understand this.
But I didn't even mean to make it about Jim Thorpe. He might be...
Oh, no. I'm just now I'm fascinated by Jim. Now I'm reading about Jim Thorpe. You've now sucked me into Jim Thorpe. I'll get off Jim Thorpe. Okay.
He rushed for 3,616 yards as a back for Carlisle. Whatever. Okay. I don't know, even know what that is. Like, I don't know what we're supposed to make of this.
This is the same issue I had with the NFL's top 100 list, is that all the people voting on it were... in like their 50s and 60s.
At least.
And they didn't include basically anyone in the modern era, not even in the modern era, in the last 20 years. That's not the modern era is the wrong way to say that. In the last like 20 years. Almost like they ignored that. And they put in a bunch of guys, like I said, like from 19, like an offensive line from 1936. I mean, he might have been great then, and he might have been, but I don't understand how he's better than, you know, someone who's playing now.
He's not. So you have this whole crazy list. And it's just that bias that you're talking about. Jeff, just to be a wise ass, I put together the top 10 comedies of all time from my point of view, because, again, I'm 38. You know what? Every single one of them came out from when I was 12 to 19. Why do you think that is? Because that's what I loved.
What's your favorite comedy?
Wayne's World.
Okay.
You okay with that?
Are you going to be upset if I've said I don't think I've ever seen that, like, start to finish?
Zuri will edit this out. This is now we're... beyond anything anyone cares about. You haven't seen Wayne's World?
No.
What the f*** is the matter with you?
I don't know. I haven't seen it. Jeez. I don't think we should edit this out. This is perfect.
What? I can't wait until people get in your mentions about having not seen Wayne's World. What? When you saw Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yes.
The Queen movie. Did you just not understand why Mike Myers was in it? Is this a revelation to you right now on the air that you don't know why Mike Myers was in that movie?
I have no idea.
Oh my God.
Wait, when was Mike Myers in the movie?
What? He's the record exec who like thinks they're going to be a bust and won't sign them. And they basically like tell him to shove it up as you know what?
Wait, that's Mike Myers?
Yes. And the reason is because Mike Myers is in Wayne's World, which brought the song Bohemian Rhapsody back to life for a generation of people our age who didn't live through Queen in the 70s. And all of a sudden, we all loved Queen. And it's why they're still popular. College football, notice.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yes. This is, yeah, yeah. Okay, Michael. Okay. Well, with the beard, it's hard to tell with the beard and the hair.
Yeah, they wear makeup in movies.
And definitely a Jufro. I like it.
You're allowed to say that. All right, so Jeff.
I am, because I'm Jewish, yes.
You can make us smarter about football. You cannot make us smarter about movies or really most of pop culture. But let's stick to your wheelhouse here. We agree that Joe Burrow is an NFL caliber quarterback. I'm not sold on number one. You say it's the smartest play. Let's see what happens in April. Okay, moving on to something you know very well, the Chiefs. To steal the words of our good buddy, Dave Damashek, I am worried that the Chiefs, your Chiefs, are soon going to take on the curse of Sposta. They are suddenly supposed to win it all right? They got a much easier path now. They better win the AFC. In fact, once they win the AFC, they're obviously going to be a favorite in the Super Bowl, whoever they get. They got these boring six-seed Titans who shouldn't even be here. They're suddenly the offense is clicking. 7-point favorite. We should probably they should probably spot them 14. I mean, after what we saw last week against the Texans, no amount of points is too much for the Chiefs. They're supposed to win this game. Bottom line.
All that is true. They're supposed to win this game. Here's my early thoughts on this game. Let's throw out what happened on Sunday, right? What happened on Sunday is against a really bad Texas team. I know that it was fun for a little bit for everyone who thought the Chiefs might lose down 24-0, but the Texans are not a good football team. They are 27th in defense. They're 31st on third down on defense. They're coached by a coach who I think is like the Jason Garrett of the AFC, just good enough to kind of get him in the dance, but falls apart. I mean, look, the coach going for a field goal, attempting the fake punt when he did, they just look completely outmanned once the Chiefs got out of their own way and the Chiefs won that. So let's throw that game out when you just talk about this game. So the question becomes, Gabe, is how much do we buy into the idea of momentum is like the wrong word, but confidence, right? Right now, the Titans are an extremely confident team. They have Derrick Henry setting rushing records in the playoffs. Their defense has played really well now 2 weeks in a row. They shut down Lamar Jackson, offense that no one thought could be remotely stopped. They made big fourth down plays last week. They're feeling good about themselves. They're a confident group heading to this weekend. But the Chiefs are just better, okay? Like, the way I've looked at this game is that the Chiefs can win this game playing their B game. The Titans can only win this game playing like an A plus game because they win one way, at least in the playoffs they have, which is rushing the football, playing great defense, and limiting Ryan Tannehill's exposure, basically, right? He's thrown for 75 yards and 88 yards in two games. First time since 1974 where a quarterback has won two playoff games throwing for a combined less than 200 yards. So I think that's my early thoughts on this game. I feel pretty comfortable the Chiefs should win this game. We'll talk more about that Thursday. But weird things happen in the playoffs, and weird things happen between the Chiefs and the Titans. Andy Reid, including the Eagles, 1-8 against the Titans all time. They do not play normal games. The game in 14 was not normal. The game in 16, the Titans won on a 60-yard field goal in 0 degrees, and the kicking balls are brand new. By the way, they should not have made that kick. They lost a playoff game to the Titans because of a Mariota touchdown pass to himself, blew a 21-3 lead. And this year's game, the Chiefs lost because they botched a field goal snap, and then they missed, and then they got a field goal blocked to end the game. Like, two weird things happening. So I think the Chiefs should win. I feel pretty comfortable about it, but there's still a little bit of worry in the back of my head.
Okay, well, let's drill into a little bit of the worry to make people smarter here. Obviously, the run game, I mean, you touched on it a little bit, but so Henry is better than anything the Chiefs have, you know, played
and
recently.
They've historically really struggled with him, which is part of it as well.
Everyone since college has.
Well, no, there were times where he wasn't, like, he didn't have the greatest of seasons or stretches, and he always played well against the Chiefs. Like, that's one thing that he has done in his career very well. And the Chiefs do not stop the run very well. They still don't. The reason why their defense has played better, and I thought their defense took a step back last week, which is what I sort of thought they would do. I didn't think they're as good as we think they are, is they can't stop the run, but teams are always behind, so they have to throw the ball. I mean, and that's partly why, against the Chiefs, he's played two games against them. He has 32 rush attempts for 246 yards.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And I do not think that includes the playoff game. And that's maybe regular season stats only, but nonetheless, he's torched them.
Well, and he torched the last two teams two teams in the AFC.
But the one caution I give you, again, is that it's hard to continue to win playoff games in one style. And Ryan Tannehill, I think, can throw the ball, and they've shown they can score points, but they have to win this game, I think, differently than the style they've been using the first two games of the playoffs.
Okay,
the Chiefs can score points. The Chiefs will score on them.
Explain this a little bit more to me, because they beat the best offense in the AFC and the best defense in the AFC when they took out the Pats and the Ravens. So didn't they sort of play different games? Like,
no, because they played – well, okay.
You're saying offensively they need to do something other than just pound you.
Yes, because I don't think the Chiefs, and this, I do not think the Chiefs, offense will not will be held to 12 points or 13 points. They haven't shown that all year, besides one game, like terrible game. Like, I guess they can play a terrible game here. But if you look at the drive, the Tennessee touchdown drives, all right, in this game, that's why field position really matters, right? They scored on a drive, 8 plays, 35 yards, touchdown. 1 play, 45 yards. 2 plays, 6 plays, 81 yards. That was Derrick Henry's long run. And then 6 plays, 20 yards. Otherwise, it was punt, 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 punt. So they had short drives, and they managed to convert. Their red zone offense right now is incredible. I believe they've scored on, if they score in the red zone at all, they've scored like 25 straight touchdowns. Like because they run the football, that's why. So what happens, Gabe, if they need to score 28 points in this game? Can they do it? That's the question. Because you're not holding the Chiefs to less than 24 to 27 points.
Okay. Well, the last time, thank you, Zuri, for this note or whoever you found it from. The last time a team won consecutive playoff games while completing less than 10 passes in each game was when Trent Dilfer did it in the 2000 season, also known as the worst quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl season.
Yeah.
So, you know, listen, Ryan Tannehill has had some nice games this year and is probably going to be perfectly fine with replacing Trent on the list of worst quarterbacks to ever win a Super Bowl if he gets that ring.
Yeah.
It's hard to bet against them. I've been out on them all year. I've Same teased here. You about it. We've joked about them and how we don't need to talk about them. And here we are, you know, with Mike Vrabel's manhood suddenly really in jeopardy.
Oh.
Really looking dangerous here for Mr. Vrabel and Mr. Vrabel Jr. Like, I'd be nervous.
I have an amazing Moyle joke I'm saving for if they win the Super Bowl.
You've already referenced the Jew Fro. You might as well give the Moyle humor away.
Like, it's going to be just, it's going to be great. Because the Moyles, there's plenty of Moyles in South Florida. They'll be ready to go.
Man, the Venn diagram of people who understand the references in this show, Zuri's arms are just being thrown up in the air. He has no idea what we're talking about.
Is the man in the Jewish faith.
This is going to sound weird, people.
He's the rabbi. He's a rabbi. He can be. My wife would not let that happen. I had an actual doctor, pediatric surgeon, who's all Jewish and was blessed to do this. They performed the circumcision. And so called a Moyle. Now, my guy, pediatric urologist, he was not a Moyle. My wife, who's not Jewish, was like, no chance in heck that we're going to have a Moyle come to the house and perform the ceremony. We will get a doctor to perform the ceremony, which he did. So the Moyles will be on call in South Florida. I can't wait.
Yeah. And to back up even further, we're referencing Moyles and circumcisions because the coach of the Titans said that he would chop his you-know-what off if he won a Super Bowl. That's how much it means to him. So we're going to hold him to it, or at least hold him close to it. I don't think we really want to see him slice anything off, but he's got to do something painful. Man, if they win this Super Bowl, he can keep his groin out of it, but we need something. I need a digit on a finger, something. I need ideas, people. Tweet Jeff. Tweet him your Moyle questions.
Please.
Let's move along. Aaron Rodgers. Okay, all you're going to hear this week is that this is a revenge game for Aaron Rodgers. Remember, everybody, Aaron grew up in Northern California, okay? He was a Niners fan as a kid.
Entire storyline.
Okay. He's still upset because they didn't pick him in 2005. Remember, they took Alex Smith, not Aaron Rodgers, and he's annoyed about it. In fact, you're going to hear this tape a lot this week. Let's play it for you, just in case you haven't heard it yet.
How disappointed are you that you will not be a 49er?
Not as disappointed as the 49ers will be that they didn't draft me.
Oh, burn, Aaron. Okay, that was right after he went to the Packers. It all worked out. It took him a couple years, but it all worked out eventually. And now here he is going back to the West Coast to try to get his revenge on the Niners. Stick it to him 15 years later. He has kind of stunk there, including this year. He lost the worst game he's probably played in years in San Francisco. But yet, and I'm being serious here, I know the sarcasm sometimes is a little thick. In this case, I'm being serious. Isn't maybe at the end of his career, isn't maybe there something to this chip on his shoulder, this revenge mentality? Couldn't this maybe inspire Aaron Rodgers to go get this win? Isn't that kind of how guys motivate themselves?
If he's not inspired to win this game to get to Super Bowl, he needs to be inspired because they're playing the Niners, and he has some major problems with motivation in his life.
Well,
this is a drawn out storyline. He wants to win this game because he wants to go to the Super Bowl, not because the Niners snubbed him 27 years ago. Like this storyline is so overblown, over the top. He doesn't need any extra motivation. They got their butts whooped early in the season, so you know there's no reason to come in this game with a big head and be overconfident. This is such an overblown storyline. I could get if it was a year after the draft, 2 years after. There's so much happened, and he's already won a Super Bowl as a Packer. This storyline, as well as it's great for the media, it plays well in the media, but it's nothing for Aaron Rodgers.
Okay, so is there anything to the idea, though, that guys do find weird ways to motivate themselves?
Of course we do. Of course we do, because it's a long season. And being slighted is a great way to feel motivated. You know, Joe Burrow, for example, getting back to him, you know, he's always talked about he's the underdog, which is kind of silly because he went to Ohio State and LSU.
Jordan didn't make his varsity basketball team, allegedly.
And I, you know, I'm motivated by people that said, you know, Jeff, you should have your own podcast. I showed them. those people showed them, dude. They thought it wouldn't work, everybody.
Yeah.
But so far we have 30 or 40 episodes, so screw you guys.
Find me another former football player talking about Moyles and Wayne's World. You just can't do it.
Or really not. Talking about Wayne's World is a very loose thing we did.
Okay.
I spoke sort of about it. Showed you everybody my own podcast. Episode 43. So showed everyone.
43. No, look, that's right.
There's always motivation, I think, for anyone. Like, you try to find it. But in a game like this, in a game of this magnitude, there should be no motivation of, I need to win this game because I grew up a Niners fan. I think it would be great for Aaron if he won this game in the Bay Area. He's had problems against the Niners in the Bay Area. It'd be great if all those things were all remedied in this game, but not just because he just wants to stick with the Niners, who, by the way, I believe have new ownership since then. Obviously, have a new general manager. They're just a different organization. There's no reason to hate. It's different people making a decision.
Well, also, every one of the guys trying to sack him was in like elementary school when he was drafted.
Oh, yeah.
They're all kids. They're at least 10 years younger than him. So he's not playing against, you know, the Niners of a previous generation. So let's talk about this team. They're 7-point dogs. That might be another motivation for Aaron if he pays attention to that kind of thing. People don't think he has a chance in this game. I've been hyping him. I think we've been sleeping on Aaron Rodgers. He's got Devontae Adams back. They looked great together the other night. He's the best quarterback left in the postseason. You could argue Pat, but I'll take Aaron. I don't know. Like, how do they match up? The run game's pretty good with Green Bay now. Like, they don't.
There's a lot of mismatches for the Niners, I think. They're very strong in their secondary, which is going to be tough against, which is going to be good, the Niners, which will be good against the Packers' passing attack. Their interior defensive line, Buckner and Armstead, will eat up the Packers' interior offensive line. So there's some issues there. And the Packers' offense will often go through lulls in the game where they just don't score a lot of points. It really has been the Chiefs' issue too until Sunday. And so I think the Niners they're just more well-rounded. They're the most well-rounded team left in the NFL. Like, I think that they should be the Super Bowl favorites. They're just really good. And they're just a better team than the Packers. Now, to your point though, Aaron Rodgers made some amazing throws the other night. There were big time throws that I think people didn't think he had left in him. And if he plays like that, it's going to be a tough out. I just think the Niners, dude, are just much better than the Packers.
Okay. So when everyone talks about, we talked about him earlier, Joe Burrow, when everyone else is looking at Joe Burrow and think they're seeing Aaron Rodgers, they're not. Like, what Aaron Rodgers can do.
Stop comparing. I know you're not doing this, but please, everyone, I hate these comparisons. I know it's part of the draft process, but Aaron Rodgers is his own special guy.
That's what I'm trying to say. The thing that you think you're seeing with Burrow, you're not. It's Aaron Rodgers is one of the only people on earth who can move around and then find perfect balance in his body on running full speed.
Agreed.
And throw the ball in one, like, within a hand of where it's supposed to be for the only person on earth who can catch it to catch it. That is, he is singularly capable of doing that.
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed.
So if this is a one score game, don't you like Aaron Rodgers over Jimmy G late in this game? I hate to boil it down to that, but don't you like that?
Who has, like, you're saying Aaron Rodgers has the ball in the
game?
If we
get a game like we saw, against Seattle, if it just comes down to Rodgers versus Wilson, who has the ball last, who can make a play and win, if it's that with him versus Jimmy G, don't you like him?
Rodgers, yeah, we like Rodgers, but the Niners' defense is just much better than Seattle's. I mean, like, that's part of it, too, is that they might not be in the situation at all.
Well, okay, fair enough. I mean, the Niners have some great players.
And they're healthy, which is, you know, hugely important this time of year, obviously.
All right. Well, I'm just maybe digging in a little too deep on something I said weeks ago. I felt that we, the media out here, we've gotten so used to talking about Aaron Rodgers as one of the best players of all time that this year, because there's been so much other fun stuff to talk about, we've just forgotten about him. And here we are at the NFC Championship game, a game he couldn't win. And there he is, and we just haven't acknowledged it yet. So let's say...
I know we talked about this the other day. Boring is good, right, in football. Do you know that they are – I think their yardage differential, which is not always fair because a lot of teams can get a lot of yards at the end of the game, for being 14-3 is like they're like 100 yards, which is nothing. Normally – It's not even for 14-3 team. It's not even close. Like you'd be 1,000-yard differential between yourself and the opponents. Like they're just a little bit flawed this year. They've been able to mask it over, but the Niners, I think, are so well rounded. You can force Jimmy G into some errors, I think, in zone coverage, but they're just so well rounded. It's hard for me to believe that if both teams play their games, the Packers win this game.
You mentioned zone coverage, and you can force Jimmy G into some mistakes. Was that Kendrick's pick that? Because he never saw him.
Yes, and he's had that problem throughout the season.
Right.
Yes.
So I'm no football expert, but I watched that replay a few times because I was watching with Vikings fans. And I was like, oh, Jimmy just never even saw there was
never
a human
saw
there. So I don't think it's as complicated to disguise coverage and confuse that guy as people think it is. And I think a good coach can figure that out.
But let's say that... You disguise coverages and he kind of is on this game and you kind of blow a coverage and he hits a home run. I think it's tougher than just doing it every time.
Okay, but I'm just saying a linebacker making a clean interception, no tip ball.
Yeah, it was bad by Jimmy.
Just
yeah,
step back and caught the ball out of midair. Like that's a troubling sign. You don't see Aaron Rodgers throw those types of picks. When Aaron Rodgers throws a pick, it's because Aaron Rodgers is just like, ah, screw
it. It's because he wants to throw it.
Yeah, he doesn't give
good
a shit. He's just going to throw
he's
it.
He's just
see
that
what
good. He's just that good. He wants to throw an interception. We reference him on the show, and he is the man. He's our friend, everyone's friend. He's Dave Damashek. If you want to hear more, check out his podcast. It's fabulous. I've been on there. That's the only reason why. But no, really, it's great. Football Fact Check on The Athletic. Find it on their pod network as usual. Every Monday and Wednesday, he gives you interviews with NFL experts at The Athletic and picks every game of every week. He's done a good job of that so far in the playoffs. Remember, everyone, Football Fact Check. Subscribe today.
All right, let's move along to the guy Aaron Rodgers beat. The only take you were allowed to have, and you're part of this group, okay, so you will have to defend yourself. The only take you were allowed to have after the Seahawks lost to the Packers was simply this. Russell Wilson is being wasted in Seattle. Pete Carroll is screwing him up. He's killing him in his prime. This offense sucks. Russell's the only person on the team who can play. The defense is garbage. Play calls are trash. Poor Russell. He can't possibly, win like this. Everyone's screwing him over. Let me just remind everyone for a second. Russell Wilson, but just for one second. This dude got carried to a Super Bowl by the best defense in the last 20 years. Okay? He lost a Super Bowl when he threw a pick that he could have won. That could have been number two for him. The guy everyone is criticizing, Pete Carroll, took a chance on him and has been with him his whole career. They've had a lot of success together. And suddenly, it's just everything about this team is wrong except Russell Wilson? Explain this to me.
Why did they take a chance on Russell Wilson? Like, what? They drafted him in the third round.
Well, that's right. They took him in the third round and gave him a starting job and let him have a 12-year career or whatever we're up to now.
Better than Matt Flynn. You know he was only drafted in 2012, I believe.
Is that all it is? Okay, 2012.
It's actually not as long.
I said 12 years. I thought it was longer. Okay, fine.
I think it's 2012.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Somewhere around there, maybe 2011.
You're right. He's been around fewer years than we think because he's had so much success, which is my point.
The reason why it is this way is because their game plan is set up almost like anti-Russ. They game plan offense like they have a subpar quarterback and not a Hall of Famer.
Explain that.
So Pete Carroll is the traditional run the football and
pass the ball. Pete Carroll and traditional. Those are words I put together.
Well, I know that some of his takes are not traditional outside football, but he is a very much traditional football coach. Defense, punting, running the football, and then every fourth quarter, Russell Wilson goes ahead and tries to win him the game. And it worked for a long time because Russell Wilson is very good at that because he's amazing. He can always do that. And it does not feel that they set up the offense to help Russell Wilson achieve basically the best he can be and the offense best they can be. And to a lot of us, that feels like obviously the wrong way to go about building your offense. For example, Russell Wilson attempted the second hardest throws out of the 8 divisional round quarterbacks, but completed the second highest percent of those throws. Like, they put him in tough spots, and they don't have to do that. They can design an offense that's more suited to what he does best, and they never do that. They always make it tough for him, and they always make it difficult on themselves by being so stubborn with their offense.
Or Russell Wilson, who I know you're not allowed to say a bad word about, and I have only ever said good words about, but let's just look at this another way. Or, great stat here from Next Gen over at ESPN, and Zuri pulled this one up, so thanks, Zuri. Russell Wilson averaged over 4 seconds to throw on Sunday, the highest in a game for any QB with 20-plus attempts over the last 4 seasons.
Yeah, okay. He was not open.
But at some point you got to get rid of it, dude. Like,
He made the plays.
I don't know if we're gonna maybe have to agree to disagree. You could say this is evidence that everything around him is trash, and he has to do it all himself.
Practice squad wide receiver drop an open pass that would have got him a first down and kept the game going.
Okay, or he should just get rid of the damn ball and not be scrambling around all day.
To who?
But that's not play calling. That's personnel issues. So which is it? What's the problem? He doesn't have the weapons. Is it a Brady type thing?
It's both.
It's both.
The problem. Look, there's clear numbers that show that too. That they don't allow really Russell Wilson to throw the ball very much in the first half, and the second half they let him throw all the time, and the offense just gets much better. It's pretty amazing the difference in those numbers. Like, and maybe you say, well, they established the run, which is the joke I made yesterday about why they do that. But it's very clear that they try to kind of let him take over at the end when kind of things aren't going very well.
Well, I mean, that's been a good strategy. I don't know.
Here's a good example here. The percent of losing plays in a game. I'm sorry, I finally found this. Okay, percent of losing plays in a game. In the first quarter, Seattle has 48% of their plays that are a loss. So that means that, you know, you run the ball in first and 10, you get 3 yards. That's a loss. In the second quarter, 55% of their plays are a loss. In the third quarter, 62% of their plays are a loss. And in the fourth quarter, only 41% of their plays are a loss. So their fourth quarter is their best quarter, which is abnormal if you look at the chart of the rest of the teams, where they're pretty much even throughout the entire game, good or bad. Or they get much worse in the fourth quarter. The Seahawks get better in the fourth quarter. That's because they let Russell Wilson run the offense.
But couldn't I argue that if they just let Russell Wilson run the offense all the time, that he'd be running around trying to make it up as he goes, and he'd look a lot more like Deshaun Watson, who hasn't won anything?
Well, you'd have to get you have to have a change of philosophy of who you are to allow him to do that. That's it's a philosophy. It's not just saying, hey, go be our guy in the first quarter. It's the philosophy of Pete Carroll not letting him do that and not designing an offense that works great around him. Okay, by the way, that 48% number of losing plays in the first quarter, by the way, in the first quarter is mostly scripted, right? So you're coming off a week of preparation to get ready to go. It's second worst in the NFL.
Okay.
Fourth quarter wins is like, you take the top five offenses out that are really good. It's like the sixth or seventh best. I mean, like they're good when they need to be good because Russell Wilson makes them great at the end of these games.
All right. I guess it's just hard for me to separate him from his coach who he's only ever played with and the defense that for most of his career,
the defense sucks, by the way, now. And here's a great example. Here's a great example of actual proof that Pete Carroll just does what he's always going to do. So 4th and 11, 2:45 left in the game, down 5. Your defense had not stopped Aaron Rodgers the entire game. They were something like 70% on third down, right? You hadn't done it all game. There was nothing showing you were going to do it if you punted the ball. Nothing. There was nothing showing that anything would change at all if you gave the ball back to the Packers. They were 9 of 14 on third downs. Fabulous, right? Was Green Bay. So I know it's 4th and 11. I get that. You have Russell Wilson. You have DK Metcalf. You can make plays. We've seen him do it all the time. So Pete Carroll, as he always does, he punted the ball, right? Because that's what he always does. He's always going to punt the ball. So his defense win the game. His defense is not good this year. This is a situation where, again, you should let your quarterback, who's the best player on your team, try to win you the game. But Pete Carroll's going to rely on his defense because that's what he's always done, even though defense is not good this year. And of course, Aaron Rodgers came down and threw the ball twice, and they won the game and never got the ball back.
You know what you should have been doing back in the early 2000s? Instead of watching every play that Pete Carroll coached at USC and grumbling and being upset being jealous of Pete Carroll's success at SC because you weren't an SC guy. Instead of that, you should have just been watching Wayne's World on loop like I was.
I don't really dislike Pete Carroll from USC.
Yeah, It seems like you got a real problem with Pete Carroll. You were a UCLA guy growing up here in the city. Then you go up and you become an Oregon.
I would have committed to USC if they offered me.
Now we're getting to the heart of the matter.
Well, that's not why. I mean, I was glad I didn't because that's USC. But I would have committed. Yeah, 100%. Ed Orgeron would call me every Monday at 7:20 on the dot, 7:20 p.m., and talk to me every Monday.
Hold on, we're an hour into this podcast. We've been talking about Moyles, and now is when you mentioned that Ed Orgeron used to call you at the exact same time weekly when you were in high school.
Yeah, every Monday. Yep, at 7:20.
Edit everything to this point out of this show. Hey, welcome to Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. Exclusive here with Jeff Schwartz. What Ed Orgeron used to call you, explain.
He's the recruiting coordinator at USC, and he was recruiting me, and he called me every Monday at 7:20 on the dot. We knew it was, hard to miss it. It's Ed Orgeron calling you, but we knew it was him every Monday at 7:20. He was actually the most honest of any, really. I had two moments of real honesty in recruiting, and I know people think recruiting is dirty and nasty. It is a lot of the time. He told me that they weren't going to offer me because they were waiting to see if someone else committed, and that if that person committed who they wanted in front of me, that I'd be out of getting an offer at USC. So they recruited me. I went to games and did the whole shindig of recruiting. And then Jeff Byers, who was the number one player, basically number one offensive lineman in the country, committed and I was out. They had 5 redshirting offensive linemen. So they only were going to take 2 in their class. So that was it. And he was honest. He told me from the beginning, like, if Jeff Byers commits, you're out. And Jeff Byers committed. He called me and said, you're out. It was all right.
Huh. That any other conversation with him? What, did he sound like that many years ago? Like,
oh, yeah. Every time. He knew exactly who called you every time he got on the phone.
Whatever happened to Jeff Byers, by the way? How's he doing?
He played a little bit in the NFL. His high school film, he was Gatorade like player of the year in high school as an offensive lineman. Dude, he would destroy people in high school. He would get like 3 pancakes a day. I mean, a play. He knocked down the offensive lineman. He knocked down, the defensive lineman, the linebacker, and the safety.
Yeah, well, that sounds great.
He was the nation's top high school football player.
Yeah,
as a lineman.
I just Googled him. I don't see any podcast for Jeff Byers. So look who's laughing now. Jeff Schwartz.
And then he came to the Panthers for a year. He's a good dude.
Okay. I was trying to make a little rivalry with him, but it's not happening. Let's move the line. It's time to play a little over-under game. All these are made up this week. I'm out of real ones, so here goes. I want to know Tannehill passing yards over-under Derrick Henry rush yards.
Oh, under.
You think for sure the quarterback will throw for fewer yards than the running back runs for?
Because the Chiefs can't stop the rush. The only thing I worry about for the Titans is that, you know, Derrick Henry's had a lot of rushes the last couple of weeks.
Oh,
a lot of them.
Zuri was ready for that.
And
he has a stat for you.
I know he does. And I'm just not sure that he can continue running at this pace. We'll find out.
Well, he did it in college. I'm going to pull up the stat because this blew my mind. So
he's also not in college anymore.
Well,
sure.
That's okay. Workload is workload. When he was in college at Alabama, and probably the best back in college at the time, he went up against Auburn. And where is this? Auburn, 46 carries for 271 yards. A week later, 44 carries for 189 yards in the title game against Florida. Ran for 38 times for 210 against LSU back then.
Yeah.
36 times against Clemson in a win in the championship.
Well, college is not, you know that college is not the same as the NFL, right? I think we're aware of that.
Well, it is in Joe Burrow's case. He's obviously just going to be great in the NFL. But if for everyone else, the rules like that don't apply.
I'm sorry that Joe Burrow is not Tim Tebow. I know that bothers you a lot.
It'll bother him one day when he realizes he's not Tim Tebow.
That he's not going to hit 179 at AAA.
When he's whiffing at single A for the Indians at bat he's going to realize life comes at you fast.
I can't believe that story has not been given its due because everyone likes Tim Tebow. It's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Story's not been given. You don't think that we've overdone Tim Tebow plays baseball? You don't think that story's been talked about?
We have not overdone on this podcast. Okay. You mean, I have some friends in minor league baseball. They can't stand it. But that's another day for another story.
Didn't play baseball for 10 years and then he hit 200 against professional baseball players. He was smacking home runs against guys who do this for a living. Okay? I get it.
Michael Jordan left basketball.
Yeah.
And then just showed up and hit 200 in AA. Didn't do rookie ball. Didn't do any of that stuff. Michael Jordan's story is a lot better than Tebow's
story.
Yeah,
fine. I'll give you that.
Okay.
I can't argue there. That's amazing what Michael Jordan did.
I don't think people realize how tough that is.
All right. Let's move along. I want to know total rings before Jimmy G gets any respect at all, especially from me. I'm giving him none right now. 2.5 rings before we start to say, you know what, Jimmy G's pretty good.
Because, by the way, Jimmy G's already a 2-time champion. Do you think if he wins a Super Bowl this year, they'll refer to him as 3-time Super Bowl champion?
Oh, that's a great point. I forgot he has those rings.
Yeah. So I'd go over.
Brady could call. That's a loophole. Brady spotted him 2 rings.
Yeah.
Huh. So that work? I actually never thought about that before. If let's say Jimmy does win a few Super Bowls and he's going into the Hall of Fame and everyone's writing a script about him. Does he get those extra 2 rings to his credit?
Well, he does, but I'll just call him Super Bowl champion. Or it'd be like 2-time champion, like starting quarterback of the 2-time, nine, whatever. You have everyone say that. And then like in parentheses, also won 2 with the Patriots.
You think they'd explain? Like, what about Steve Young? Didn't Steve Young get a ring as a backup behind Montana? Am I imagining that? I feel like he had a. It's not common that a guy becomes a Hall of Famer and sits behind another Hall of Famer.
I think Steve Young. No, Steve. I don't think he. Maybe in the late 80s he got one.
I think they probably didn't overlap during Super Bowl seasons. I think Steve Young was behind him for more years than.
He won 3 Super Bowls. So he won 2 with the Niners before Joe. But we never talk about Steve like that, though. We only talk about the one he won as the quarterback in 95.
Right.
The 94 season. And
So you're looking it up as we speak. God, you're good at the multitask. Steve Young has rings that Joe Montana won for him?
Yeah, he's a three-time Super Bowl champion. He only won 1 as a starting quarterback with the Niners.
Okay, so there's the perfect comparison. So I wonder if Jimmy G wins 1 ring as the starter in San Francisco, and then 10 years from now, you know, that massive giant guy shows up on a Fox set somewhere to shake his hand and surprise him. That was a bunch
of nonsense. I think he won. What? Wait. Do you not like David Baker doing that?
The TV producer in me was a little confused by all that.
I loved it. I mean, it was great. It's great for the league and great. David Baker is his son, Sam Baker, went to USC.
Yeah, I know. I got no issue with the man, the 6'9", 400 pound guy who shows up in a red coat.
I've met him before. He's very nice.
He seems like a lovely guy. I got no issue with him. I thought, you know, I'm a little confused by the emotions we see on set in that moment. Like, what do you think that guy's here for? But what?
Wait. Do you don't think they were genuine?
No, of course. I mean,
Terry Bradshaw was like I wish I had a buddy like that every time I did something great.
I agree with you. I would love to have a hype man like Terry Bradshaw. Terry was happier for Jimmy than Jimmy was for Jimmy when they
Jimmy almost had a heart attack, which wasn't very helpful.
That was scary. But I know I found the whole thing to be a little, it was odd. The guys were so overwhelmed. I'm kind of struggling, and Sheck and I talked about this a little bit. I don't know why this is so validating for these guys who've already, we've all agreed they're terrific. They have rings. Like, they have great careers. They're well respected. You know, like, I didn't know that this would be so important to them still. I'm not saying it shouldn't be important.
Because
I'm just saying I'm surprised.
Like, imagine
if
you got, like, imagine, like, you've had a great career so far. Like, I mean, how would you say your career's gone?
Hall of Fame level.
Okay. So if the David Baker of production of media, I don't know what.
Sure. Yeah. No, that's a good description.
Yeah. I was going to short you and say podcast production, but you've done way more than that. So I want to give you a little bit of credit. If he came to you and said, Gabe, congratulations, you're in the Hall of Fame, you'd feel great. And I think Jimmy Johnson summed it up properly. This is the ultimate validation of your career. And that's why it's so important.
I was
put into the Southern California Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, and that validated me as a Jew who also played sports.
Who else is in it?
It's a huge list.
Come on.
It's like, I went in with Ramona Shelburne and Mark Stein to cover the NBA. It's basically just like they let everyone in who's ever been Jewish and remotely Jewish.
Just a bunch of writers? No, you just named two writers.
This weekend, Cody Decker's going in, who played baseball at UCLA. I actually played Little League baseball with him. He's a good buddy of mine. There's a guy named
Cody Decker who's Jewish?
Yeah. Huh. He went to SAMO. Okay. And we played Little League together. He was on the Israeli baseball team that they made the movie about. Okay, so this weekend, this year, it's actually next weekend, the week after, they have so Cody Decker played baseball. There's two soccer players, an ice hockey, another baseball, a baseball coach, Jock Peterson, who plays for the Dodgers.
Sure. He's
a track
Jewish?
And field, softball. Debbie, my agent, Debbie Spanner, is going in as well. And Soren Thompson, who's a fencer.
Okay, wait a second. So Jock Peterson is Jewish?
I guess. I thought he
was like Swedish.
I didn't know that. And then there's Jewish Sports Hall of Fame youth inductees. There's three youth inductees.
Okay. This is really, the theme of this show is, we're really into a very specific niche of listener right now.
So so I'm saying like that validated my career. So I can understand why Jimmy Johnson feels that way.
I'm happy for the guys. I'm not throwing shade. I just was surprised by how overwhelmed with emotion they were, given that they've already been showered praise upon for their whole lives. And I thought, honestly, I was surprised to know that Jimmy Johnson was not in the Hall of Fame. I just assumed he was. So it was strange to me that it took him by such surprise. I'm not making a joke about it. I'm not throwing, you know, anything nasty in his direction. I'm happy for him. Good for him. But I thought it was strange. That's all. I thought it was strange that Terry Bradshaw was that excited about it. That's like his best friend. He already knows and loves this guy. I didn't know why that was the emotion that poured out of them. It was just an interesting moment.
Okay.
I'm all for it, though. Keep doing it. I'd like for them to come up with even more of a surprise. I mean, once that giant walks on the set, you kind of know what's happening.
I feel like now they need to do it to where they just like surprise dudes at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Like Dave Baker's the checkout.
Totally.
Person. Yeah.
And he should have a mask. There should be no red coat. Well, like, let's really. 6'9".
How are you going to do that?
That's a good point. There's probably hard to hide that guy anywhere you go. All right, let's move along. We are still currently in a show with a bunch of things in a rundown. So I'm going to go through the last few things. Ravens wins next season over under 11.5.
Over.
Really? This time you're going to be on the Ravens train.
I think that they're still going to win a lot of regular season games. There's obviously issues here with their playoff performance, but we're talking about regular season, right? And no one has stopped them. And I think it's tough to just say, well, just do what the Titans did, okay? The Titans were outstanding on defense. They played with no hesitation. They obviously had a clear game plan and they executed the game plan. I think it's hard to just say, do that. Like, hey, just do this against them because you don't have the same players, don't have the same personalities, don't have the same ability to tackle and play in space. And so I think they're going to win a lot of games again next year. And they have cap space. They can go against they need a big wide receiver in the worst way possible. They might need a new right guard if Yander retires. So there's I can see them drafting a big bruising running back. There's many ways they can improve. I'm going over.
Okay.
There's plenty of teams I like to go under, not this team.
Okay. Well, I hope for Lamar's sake and the league's sake that he can get a ring someday, because it will hopefully make the league more exciting and break out of the old conventional wisdom that gives us, you know, guys like, and no disrespect to Matt Ryan, but I don't need to see Matt Ryan for 20 years in the league. I mean, that's just boring.
Yeah, I know. Just being like really good at your position sucks. So I'm sorry. Being good at your job is bad for Gabe. Sorry, everybody.
I just prefer that somebody be a little bit more interesting. So let's talk about a guy who's a little bit more interesting, but may not ever have the ring I think he deserves. Deshaun Watson career Super Bowls as the starter, since apparently we have to qualify this. Over under 0.5. Will he ever get one?
Not with Bill O'Brien. No.
That's the problem?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bill's terrible. Plain and simple. He might get one eventually, but not with Bill O'Brien. I'm going to go under here.
Was Bill O'Brien on that staff, that USC, that didn't recruit you? Why do you hate Bill O'Brien so much?
He's a terrible game manager. That's why.
That's it? Just football?
Yeah, I don't dislike the guy. I mean, he's got a weird-looking chin, but we all have our problems.
So I feel like Deshaun, he's one of those intangible, like, he just wins kind of guys, you know? And he did it in college, and he seems like he's doing it in the NFL, and I just want that to work.
There's things he's got to work on. I think his pocket presence at times can be kind of subpar. Other than that, I think he's got everything you need. He's really good.
All right. Well, I hope then that they make a change and get him a coach that'll help him win a championship. A guy like Pete Carroll, who can help you, you know, turn from like an athletic scrambler into a champion. And then one day be sold out and given the excuse that you're
you didn't even go to USC. I don't understand. Like, your wife's not listening to this. You don't have to like USC in the podcast. You know that.
I don't think that your attacks of Pete Carroll are fair or warranted. And I think the record books make it seem like Pete Carroll was never at SC.
They're fair and they're warranted. It's so stupid. The USC was so good. Oh, they kicked our butts. Oh, they were good.
Not good enough to have Reggie Bush acknowledged.
Even though we beat him in 07, it was like the greatest win I ever had at Oregon. It was so much fun. We would beat USC finally.
Who were the stars of that SC team you beat?
It was Sanchez's like second start.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The beginning of a great ride.
But the defense was all the guys got drafted. It was like all 11 guys got drafted.
Yeah.
It was
that's probably Clay, right?
It was Everson Griffin and Lawrence Jackson and Feely Mwala, Cedric Ellis, Ray Maluga, Keith Rivers, Brian Cushing, Clay Matthews, Terrell Thomas, Taylor Mays,
did you just quietly Google that, or of a sudden your brain just kicked in? And
Thomas Williams was the fifth string linebacker who got drafted in the fourth round. Who we played, and we beat him.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. Joe Burrow never played a team like that, but whatever.
He did not, no.
All right. Let's do the last thing we like to do here, which is spot a little conversation in social and highlight it and have you explain a little bit more. So I noticed you, I think, retweeted and commented over a tweet from the Honey Badger, who shared a video of how he basically didn't blow up Deshaun Watson, even though he could have.
Oh, yeah.
So he pulled up at the last second on what would have been a clean hit if he wanted to. Some people were like, oh, that's your boy. Why aren't you playing tough football? And he basically said the game was over. Yeah, that's my boy, but I'm not fake tough. I don't have to hit you to make you feel like I'm a big beast. This is football. But every act isn't violent. And you like that message, so go ahead, explain.
Well, I liked it because he had played really well in the game, Matthew did. And he was in Watson's face, and there was a timeout that was called because he was messing with Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson kind of was spooked by the coverage, and it was very clear that Matthew played well. And they're best friends. They're boys. Like, they're good buddies. Chiefs are up by 20 points in that game in the fourth quarter, the end of the game. Deshaun Watson knew that Matthew could have blown him up. But to Matthew's point, he goes, look, he's my boy. We're winning the game. He knew I was there. No reason to blow him up. I have respect for my brother. We're beating them. And I think the best part is he goes, I don't need to hit him like that to be tough. Like, I'm not going to be fake tough. And I loved it because I think it's a good sign that you don't have to do – it's a violent game, but you don't always have to be violent in the game. And so I liked it.
Okay. Well, I like –
Do you like it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I my respect for Honey Badger has grown as I have watched him, I think, sort of evolve as a person. I feel like he went from being one of these guys who was an undeniable talent and maybe a bit of a loose cannon. And you know, I'm not great with the facts right now, but I feel like there were some question marks about him, the dude, several years ago. Nobody wondered if he was a good player, but he couldn't quite stick because people weren't sure if he had it all together. And then, like, I don't know whether he just matured or got help or did change something, but I feel like now as an older player, he's just this mature, wise, level-headed guy who isn't quite as fast or can't jump quite as high as he once did, but he suddenly seems like he totally gets it and can help his team. And I think that's cool. I think it's nice to see that at a time when some other players just go completely the other direction. You know, like they don't figure it out and they just can't use the talent they have. And I don't know. I've always liked him as a player and I like to see that he's doing well.
It's good. He overcame a lot. And he was there last night, too, at the national championship game.
Yeah.
But, he, you know, he's really – we don't talk about him as much as other players, you know, this year for, like, best acquisitions.
Yeah.
Dude, he's changed the Chiefs defense. Good for him.
Yeah, but, I mean, a few years ago, you'd have been like, I don't know, can we have that guy around here?
Well, it was in college. I mean, and Bruce Arians took a chance on him in Arizona, and Matthew proved him right.
Yeah, well – it was cool to see him tweet what he did and make a good argument the way that he did without being mean or, you know, a lot of guys like to get in the mud with fans and I don't think he was willing to do that. So good for him. And yeah, and he was there last night enjoying it. Unlike Odell, who was, I guess, throwing money around, like handing money out to players and stuff. Somebody's going to have to explain how that's possible, but he was hamming it up in front of cameras last night. I didn't see the Honey Badger doing anything silly.
But even if... Let's ignore the NCAA violation, which I'm sure someone will finagle out of thin air for the Odell thing. I like my money, and I just don't give it away like that.
Yeah, I don't think you have as much of it as he does.
I have enough money to hand someone $500 if I like the person, like Odell did. Maybe it was more than $500.
I think he probably handed out a few more dollars than that.
But like I told this out, like if Oregon wins a championship, you're gonna get a firm high five from me.
Oh, that's nice.
You're getting Oregon fans. You ain't getting any money. That's Odell has a lot of money. Good for him.
Listen, that's a high five from a Southern California Jewish athlete Hall of Famer. That's not just a high five from any guy.
Well, yeah, I mean it's I think I got inducted to the Hall of Fame for more of my looks than anything else. It's even better. Okay.
You are a rare. I am in this company with you. We are rare men of Jewish heritage with blue eyes. You don't see many of us.
I have green eyes, but thank you.
Okay, that's a podcast. I can't even see your face.
I didn't know that you studied me that intently to know my brother has blue eyes.
Apparently, like, I don't. I thought you. My
had
blue
dad,
eyes.
My dad and brother have blue eyes. I have green eyes. At least that's what I thought. Maybe let's take a little.
Wait,
selfie
I haven't
here.
Been doing this show with Mitch Schwartz for 43 episodes.
My eyes are still green. Yes, okay. I just checked. So. No, my dad and brother have green eyes. I do not. My son has hazel eyes. My little girl has brown eyes. So, the green has been stopping passed down. All right, I think we've gone off the rails enough now.
Completely. Use those eyes to go watch Wayne's World.
I'll do that at some point, but probably not. All right, guys, thank you for tuning into the podcast. I really appreciate it. We're getting a lot of interaction. I love it. We're getting tweets, getting reviews, ratings. It seems to be taking off. People less upset with you, Gabe, so even better. But I appreciate all the listeners. I see your messages. I try to respond to all of them. At Jeff Schwartz on Twitter. Gabe, what's your Twitter? It's like at Gabe something.
At Gabe something. That's right. Okay. Just tweet that and you'll get to me. Yeah. No, at Gabe the WP. But okay, just whatever. Tag me in when you need me to defend my silly takes.
But thank you guys for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys Thursday. Have a great couple of days.